Good afternoon, everyone. Today is June 28, 2018. It's 2 p.m. We're assembled in the Board of County Commission conference room for general discussion. First item on our agenda today is the Preserve Management Plan and Environmental Assessment and Wild and Scenic River Study. Well, I'm assuming this is for the monument.
Yeah,
the Oregon Cave Monument. Mr. Baker, Tom Baker is here. Come on up and sit down.
Thank you so
much. I know those chairs are more comfortable, but that's by design.
I think that's is probably better anyway.
I'm Tom.
Nice to meet you.
Pleased to meet you.
Wally, you want to come up?
All right.
Sure. Also, Wally Hicks, our county council, is on board. Present is Commissioner Hare, Commissioner Morgan, and Commissioner DeYoung.
Well, first of all, thank you all for having me here today and for inviting me here. The meeting with the Josephine County Commissioners was high on my to-do list, and today is my 1 month day of being at the caves, so I'm kind of new enough to still use it as an excuse, but just barely. So I'm still trying to come up to speed. We have a lot of moving parts going on up there.
What's your slow season at the caves right now? So you got lots of free time.
We don't have much going on right now. So. But really, I really appreciate it. My home park is Fort Laramie National Historic Site. I'm here on a 120-day detail while they do a search for a permanent superintendent. That actually closed yesterday, and it opened June 12th, and I had my application in the morning of the 13th, so hopefully I get extra points for enthusiasm, but
did you apply for this position?
I did, indeed, yeah.
And where'd you come from?
Fort Laramie National Historic Site, High Plains of Southeast Wyoming. Throughout my park service career, when I've been in a position to do so, which has been most of it, I always like to work very closely with the county commissioners. And I just think it's really important to have that close working relationship between the National Park Service units and the local elected officials. So I appreciate it. So I brought you each a folder, and in that folder are two pieces. One is the very short version of the Preserve Management Plan. The other is the foundation document. And I brought this because I'm only assuming that you've probably never seen this before. And National Park Service units used to do what are called general management plans, which have like a 15 to 20 year lifespan, and it was taking 10 years to complete them because they're so complicated. And so they said, I think we need a different way to do this. So we went to the foundation documents, which is a much more basic overview of what the park is about, what the park purpose is, what the important fundamental values are of the park, what are the important resources that we pay attention to in the park. So I thought that would be a good piece of background for you to have. And so this is the short version that's in your folders, and I also brought the long version for your library in case you are have more interest and would like to look into that deeper. So, and I'll just for the record, I will state the purpose of Oregon Caves National Monument. So the Oregon Caves National Monument and Preserve protects and preserves the scientific interest and the unusually diverse and concentrated biology and geology of an important solution cave system and watershed within the Siskiyou Mountains for the benefit, understanding, and enjoyment of the public. So that's, in a nutshell, what we're there for and what we're all about. And what all of our efforts go toward. So, the Preserve Management Plan. Several years, actually, since the establishment of the park, they've been looking at the fact that the park should include more than just the monument itself. And let's look at the back of the foundation document, because that's an easier map.
Look at that map.
Yeah. So the green rectangle is the original national monument, which was made a national monument in 1909. Ever since then, they've been, like I said, they've been looking at preserving that entire watershed. And so we finally came to an agreement with the Forest Service in 2014 that established the preserve part of it. And pretty much the boundary of the preserve follows the ridge lines around the monument. So it's a good, there are good geological reasons for the preserve boundaries. And that also defines the watershed, which runs to the northwest, coming out of the caves and all. So as part of having the legislation that established the preserve, Congress, as they always do with enabling any park unit, requested that we do a preserve management plan. And the management plan is an overarching, very broad view of management objectives. It doesn't get down into the nitty-gritty details of how that happens. What it does is define what the resources are and what we're going to be doing with them, how we're going to manage them in a fairly holistic overview. So you will see that what the Forest Service has been doing forever with that part of the forest is not materially different from what we're proposing to do. Now, with any action of the federal government that requires compliance with the National Environmental Policy Act, also known as NEPA, I'm sure you've heard that many times before, it requires that you start with a no-action alternative, which is that management would continue as it always has. And then from there, you develop other alternatives. Now, if we were in, say, an environmental impact statement situation, there would be numerous other alternatives. It's not that complicated with the preserve. It's pretty straightforward. What we're looking at here, there's really very little difference between what the Park Service is proposing to do with it and the preferred alternative and what the Forest Service has been doing with it forever. The resources will be managed the same. Access will remain largely the same. Mostly, if there are any roads that would be closed, they're roads that the Forest Service was already looking at closing for a variety of reasons, but mostly for greater recreational opportunities for non-motorized use, for bicycling, for equestrian hiking, those types of uses. There are only a few little spots in the preserve that we're looking at doing that. We're also looking at possibly developing some more a higher level of backcountry camping use there that would also encounter hiking, bicycling, possibly equestrian. We've been working with the Backcountry Horsemen of America in looking at how that all happens. But like I was saying, that starts getting into the implementation details. This is, at the moment, just a very broad view of it. I think what we've agreed with the horsemen on is that is part of an implementation plan, and we'll look at the details of how that happens when we come up. The other big concern in the preserve is fire management, of course.
It's the number one.
And all those fire chiefs sitting behind you.
Yeah, I get that.
If you're not fire management, none of the other stuff is going to be there.
That's right. So really, the fire management, it is exactly as it's always been with the Forest Service. As we move forward, we don't have a specific fire management plan for the preserve. Right now, that'll be the next step in the process.
It was designated almost 2 years ago, and that was
Correct. A
conversation I had with your predecessor. And the board, previous board's largest objection was the fact that the Forest Service has not been managing for fuel loads in that area. Mm-hmm. So it concerns me that there's going to be a continuation of what I deem is a lack of management. I'm just going to give you this. This is a photo that ODF put out recently about fire propensity in the state of Oregon. And you can probably find out where Josephine County and the Caves is. You're at the center of that.
Yep.
So if you're not managing for fuel loads, it's inevitable that you're going to experience it, and it's not going to be kind to that area. And for me, who's born and lived, raised here, grew up down the street on the Caves Highway my whole life, my family's been there since 58, you're going to lose this asset. My dad replaced the fire exits, fire escapes on the chateau when they were wood to metal. And it's because you don't want to be walking down a wooden structure in the event of a fire. That thing is clad in kindling, cedar bark. It's just, it's going to happen at some point with being the center of that eye, the number one fire-prone area in the state. There should be no other concern. I struggle with the idea of dedicating X number of millions of dollars to renovating something that, where is the X number of dollars that's been dedicated towards reducing fuel loads, being compliant with Senate Bill 360 in the state of Oregon of having defensible space for Chief Hoke over there, or any of the ODF guys that are going to show up and be like, man, I would have loved to have done something, but something that sticks out in my mind from Chief Hoke said years ago, fire doubles every 30 seconds. You're not exactly on the way to somewhere. So you can do the math about how long it's going to take anybody to get there to help out in the event of a fire. You have to have space, an opportunity to defend it, or it's kind of lost.
Yeah, and we actually are actively engaged in fuels management. Unfortunately, we have very small staff, and we're getting help from Lassen Volcanic, from Redwoods, from Crater Lake. We have all these guys helping us. The Forest Service helps us with some of our fuels management in smaller ways. But we do have an active fuels management program. And we are also already actively doing the required mapping and the archaeological work that's necessary preceding fuels management work. So we are heading in that direction, and I certainly understand
slow.
That it.
And I'm not holding your feet to the
slow.
Fire.
No, I get it.
They will be, though. You just got there for a month, and you're aspiring to the position. Our position here on the board and previous boards, every board we've had so far, is that's the number one concern for Josephine County, is it's been bad. Brutal with the Biscuit Fire, the Checo Fire, the Douglas Complex. If you do the math, it's almost like Josephine County is 1,050,000 acres. We've had half of that number almost in the last two decades, and we're not done. This season's going to be bad. These guys are all concerned about it, and the Forest Service has not been the greatest champion of putting them out in a lot of situations.
No.
And so your ability to be resilient with an agency that is
a let it burn policy,
a little more reluctant to get on it, put the hot cold stuff on the wet hot stuff.
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad you mentioned that about the let it burn policy. That is not the fire management plan for the monument. And that, by default, right now, until we develop a full separate fire management plan for the preserve, that transfers to the preserve for us, which is full suppression. I mean, that is entirely our
I appreciate that it's your mantra, but it isn't necessarily been the Forest Services. So it might be a little of a cultural change, a shift for them in some situations. I hope they can buy into that.
Yeah, it may, but when you're working in interagency coordinating groups, the fire philosophy of the specific unit where the fire occurs is what is the overriding factor in determining suppression tactics.
Because this is in a monument, the whole thing's going to be in a monument. I'm sitting here looking on page 10, and there's a lake right in the middle of it, and big little metal is up there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's in a monument, are you going to take every little puddle and it's going to be a home for the salamander? So therefore, we can't draw water out of that. We've got to go all the way to the Rogue River. And nope, that's in the wild and scenic. We can't touch that. Now we've got to go, we can't do that. If you're going to put a fire out, there is no reason to save that lake if there's nothing around it, if everything burns to the ground. Your watershed is gone. It's completely compromised. So in your suppression plan, is there going to be something there that any body of water anywhere near that fire is eligible for fire, for a helicopter to dip in there, drag water out of it, mm-hmm. and go, without having to get somebody from Congress to, you know, get into session and or anything like that? That's already in your plan that is exactly what that water is going to be used for. We don't care what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
No. And I don't know if that'll ever happen because
lake turns into a mud puddle.
What's that?
Big little lake turns into kind of a mud puddle.
Well, yeah, it does. But I mean, there's Lonesome Lake up there and Azalea Lake.
But they often, with the, it's the species invasiveness of other waterways or this and that they have to do all the tests before they can use that waterway. Or
right.
You'll
it's
hear about tractors going into the wildland area and say, we got to spray that down so it doesn't contaminate, but then they don't use it to put out the fire. So what was the contamination threat in the first place?
Do you also just coordinate with the Forest Service or the interagency offices to talk about the overall plan? Because we have a pretty robust community wildfire protection plan that might help guide some of the mm-hmm. overarching principles. Those guys helped work on it, and Sarah. For about 5 years, so it's one of the most robust in the nation. It might be a good place to start.
Absolutely, yeah. It would be. And the interagency coordinating centers aren't just federal agencies. It's state and county level.
You guys should consider also ODF as a partner. BLM has done
mm-hmm.
that.
Yes.
And they have the quickest responses, in coordination with the other. But
do you have to go with the Forest Service for your fire suppression?
No, and I only use that as an example because it was already the Rogue Siskiyou National Forest.
This is a public meeting, but I don't have any problem saying if you have to choose between two agencies.
Well, there's...
I would choose ODF every day of the week, twice on Sunday.
Well, there's typically not a choosing. It goes to central dispatch, and the dispatchers call out the resources, and each agency makes resources available.
But like BLM has a contract, or should by the end of the month, with ODF to do those fire suppression. If the Park Service has the discretion at some point to enter into a similar kind of an agreement between Forest Service or BLM, this board would recommend ODF.
No, I understand your concern there.
Well, and their high success rate actually getting fires out and keeping them to minimum acreage, that speaks for itself.
The resume isn't exactly comparable. You've got the Biscuit Fire in Pacheco, and mm-hmm. you've got fires that never got a name because ODF put them out. Nice.
No
we don't. We don't like. We don't like fire to get names.
Yeah.
Dan,
or T-shirts.
Young, the chair. He's
yeah.
T-shirts never did anything.
No.
And one of the things, and just kicking around because I have a lot of time to daydream around here, but you're putting a ton of money into that chalet up there. And
I just noticed.
I was thinking, dreaming again, is there any way to incorporate, for instance, just say, all right, we're going to incorporate the mining history of the of Southern Oregon and go upstream to a nearby creek, dam it up. Oh, don't panic. Dam it up. Create a retention pond up there, out of sight, out of mind from anybody around, and then run a pipe down with enough head to feed three giants, mining giants, around that chalet. Because if the fire gets going, winding up down through there, and you can't get it out, at least wet enough of it down around it, then maybe the fire can go around it and save your $18 million remodel.
Yeah, well, the fire suppression is a huge part of that remodel. And on the call, we have weekly calls because we're still in the design development
right, but you're gonna,
phase
you're,
of that.
You're going to save the inside with fire suppression.
No, exterior. Outside. This is exterior suppression.
Okay. What is it run? Is it run off
we're,
the pumps?
We're talking, pardon?
Is it run off the pumps?
I would assume, but I don't
they're
know.
They're still designing.
I don't know the ins and outs of the whole thing.
Well, it was an idea of putting two of our industries together to try to see how to save.
A giant right. gravity fed. You don't want all the power wires burned down along the road going up there, and you don't have any power, and then you get your generator fired up, and so on and so forth. But if you had three giants up there that could basically just wet stuff down till the fire passed, just something to consider. It's next to free, and as we said, it takes the mining community would probably be just ecstatic to be a part of that. You could even shoot them off once in a while to make sure they work.
Can you tell we're passionate about our community?
We
like our caves.
Totally
we don't want it to
we're
be lost.
We're passionate about the resource. That's a heck of a resource for Southern Oregon.
Taking 13 people up there.
And we see in our future, in that building's future, the way this thing keeps expanding, and when it's expanded and it's left alone to work on its own, it becomes a tinderbox up there.
Just so from a fire protection standpoint, we do have water supply up there as well as some
tank.
Hydrants in the area. But the chateau itself, we actually have exterior sprinkler systems that are they can be activated to provide to the structure itself because of the wildfire. In fact, that sits on a very steep slope.
Yeah.
So there's already things in place, but the idea of putting up a dip tank up there is very valid. We already have a helicopter landing zone. Pre-established at the case, but there is features of fire protection for the chateau.
See, we've never been briefed on that. I mean, I've never been in 8 years. I've never been briefed.
We're just taking this thing as what we visualize it now.
Right.
And I don't think I've ever seen, well, I certainly didn't get a chance to go through this in the last 23 minutes. Okay.
We'd like to feel comfortable. And when we talk to people about, what is going on up there, These plans have been 2 years. The designation has been happening, and then we're getting the redevelopment of the inside and the furniture and stuff like that. It's like, man, you guys have steering, and you've made progress, but I don't know. Your predecessor was not a frequent flyer here, so we encourage this kind of thing because you might have an opportunity to talk to a handful of people, but man, we talk to people every day, and we get out there and we can say one thing or we can say no. Did you know they do all these other things? And then they're doing these things.
All three of us kind of commissioned. We're born and raised, other than military service and college. We've lived here in Josephine County our whole lives. So it's not like, gee, we blew in and we're trying to do it. With that, I went through the Oregon Caves when I was 15.
Did they have cars yet?
I was one of the first guys to go in there chasing my dog.
My best friend's last name is Bigelow. Her grandfather is, the namesake and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we go way back on stuff.
Yeah.
So just so that you know, we also have since expired, and we're in the process. We're meeting in a very near future to reestablish the James will play the contract. We have a contract with the Park Service to provide shelter fire protection for the caves. As part of that, if we're going up there, it's going to become a wildland fire. I would be calling for all kinds of resources ourselves because it is such a long
So you guys have the contract right now?
The contract. We have a contract. We're holding it, still being in place. It just had expired. We've given our comments back to it. There's just some very minor language changes. Basically, it deals with billing. But the Park Service has changed their contract boilerplate. So So we have to reestablish a contract based on their new boilerplate contractual language. So we are still honoring the old contract as if it was in place. So, but that is currently what our plan is for.
My concern, and it's a concern not just with the Park Service on this particular instance, but it's with almost every federal agency I've ever dealt with. By the way, you know this is closes public comment is on Monday. So if I came back here and I said, "Boy, I've got page 46 through 80, I'm going to redline that for you and get that to you Monday morning, and then I want to see what you want to do with it by Monday afternoon," it's not going to happen. You could check the box that you've been in to talk to the county commissioners, but I don't know whether our input, if we had any valuable input at this point, if it would ever go anywhere in the policy.
Well, that's...
And the draft is printed in such pretty format that...
We're not going to change
That's what the comment period is about, though. And when the comment period ends, then there's an analysis period where you look at the comments and where there are substantive comments. We look at what needs to be done about that. You know, if we need to change language and in the alternatives and whatnot, that's the time to do it.
Well, there is language that you used when we started out, that we were going to maintain current level of management. And I feel my fear is that status quo style management is going to get you status quo types of outcomes. And that's a fear of ours, is that it might ratchet it up just a tad, exploring other mm-hmm. options for fire suppression agencies. Those are real concerns that we have, and what we don't want to be is I told you so in a year or two. We don't want that, and we want to be a partner at 110% with the Park Service, and your leadership going forward is going to be vital to that. You have a partner here. We'll carry water literally or figuratively if the public starts. We've asked non-binding questions in the last 9 years. Of being aggressive about what is the public that lives here really want to see with things. And they're supportive of doing aggressive fuels reductions and being out front on this stuff.
The locals are getting really testy when half of the tourist season that we're supposed to depend on so highly, when half of the tourist season, Southern Oregon is blanketed in smoke. It's been two out of the last 3 years that's happened because of fires that got out of control and were not, we felt, weren't, the suppression level was not what it could have been from the very onset. And it just seemed like, but the smoke will blow away, don't worry about it. But then it's wintertime and we've lost half of the season. And that's why it gets, the folks that live here saying, are you doing anything? And that's our charge. You bet we're going to lean and lean and lean until we can be halfway satisfied that there's something in place that's going to get these damn things put out before they ruin our economy year after year. Not to even talk about the resources that are gone. You know, we can't log in the monument. That's fine. We'll get no money from the trees and the board footage up there. But it's the smoke from that's going to blanket Southern Oregon again and put us out of business for another year. And so we really... really, really concerned about that. Certainly. Very concerned. Then when you find you can't dip into Babyfoot Lake or whatever because, you don't know where that water is going to come from and what it has in it. Let's test it and send it off to Tacoma, Washington to get tested while the fire burns out of control. That is unacceptable by anybody that's fought of fires.
Yeah. So, in all honesty, I don't know... about the dippability of Bigelow Lakes and that, but I can tell you that one of the things that we have discussed and is on the table all the time is that if we have a fire up there, we go retardant. And there is very few places where you will see retardant used if it's going to get into the rivers and that type of thing. And we value the resources up there at the cave
So it's
higher,
been blessed for that
higher
location.
Than
is it topography to where you can get a plane in there?
Yeah. We just had a fire last year, and we had air support immediately on it.
Well, Tom, you're here for a limited amount of time, and we've really dominated, but I think you can feel the passion that we have for fire suppression and anything you can do ahead of time. So tip of the spear with tourism being impacted and stuff, we're there for you if you need it on the fire suppression or the fuels mitigation beforehand.
I really appreciate that.
And you
that.
Can have a copy of this, or if you take, you've got that.
Yeah.
It's easy to find on the Oregonian's website, but it comes from ODF, and the statewide assessment, it really jumped off the map at me.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
even relative to everybody else. Like, you look at the coast, they're just fine. And over here, mm-hmm. they're not too bad. Man, we're it. And so.
Who's the watershed council that's working with you?
I do not know, to tell you the truth.
Well, and I just
I'll claim newness again on that. I don't know.
It'd be worth
is.
Finding out kind of where they're at, because one of the things that we saw up at Tillamook, we recently looked at their forest management going up there in the watershed council. They have three watersheds in Tillamook County, and they're all equally a part of helping with the waterways and the contaminations and stuff like that. And it's all part of healthy forest management with fuels reduction and reforestation and even pesticides and such, but it's not getting in the waterways. So I'm not sure who you'd have to work with out there, but since you are a watershed, I'd be curious.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we want that monument to stay, at least for however many more years all of us are going to be here.
Got another 100 years with Commissioner DeYoung. So.
Yeah. I want to see it stay in perpetuity.
Oh, that would be swell.
That's why we're doing that kind of work.
If you want it to stay in perpetuity, now is the time when you're making the policy that you have some deliverables. When it is on fire, that's not the time to say, whoops, can't go out of this lake here, and you can't do this, you can't do that. I want to, anything you can dump on that fire, dump it.
Yeah.
So these guys are going to be the first responders, and by the time you get there, it's going to be fairly good size.
And it's a great segue into what I was going to add. So we're a reactionary force. If you have a problem, we're coming. You know, you have the opportunity now to take care of the preventive piece of what needs to happen up there to protect the chateau and the other facilities, the residences, the office buildings, those kind of things. Prevent them from becoming a wildland fire, or a wildland fire taking those buildings out. You've got a great opportunity to try to make some change. I'd love to be involved in that. One of the things that concerns me, though, is it is a long ways for us to get up there. It's about a 22-minute response on a good day, depending upon traffic, for us to get up there. The Park Service had a Type 6 engine up there, and they've since disbanded or dismantled it. In fact, I reaped the benefit because I actually got the pump unit out of that thing. And the bureaucracy of the Park Service was, well, we can't have a fire truck because we don't have anybody that's trained, that's not certified to be wildland firefighters. You know, because of the significant distance for us to get up there, us, ODF, Forest Service, to make a difference. You know, having a Type 6 engine with a couple of folks who have been 190, 130 trained that can take care of some initial attack on the small stuff and keep it small until the cavalry shows up would make a huge difference, because right now as it stands, if you get a fire going up there, it could be a lightning bust, it could be anything, you know, that fire's going to continue to burn until the professional resources get there. By then, we're not going to be dealing with significant fire. I would strongly urge that they get that Type 6 engine back, train some people so they can do something.
There's where my giants come in. It's gravity. Don't have to even start a pump, just turn the valve on, you're going.
I would add one more piece, and Tom, to the degree that you can influence your decision makers and your other federal partners to bring fire back to the landscape as part of the fuels management process, and not just do the mechanical stuff, because a lot of that, if we can get in there and burn again on the landscape level, will make a big difference, and then brings it back to what it's supposed to be anyway. So.
Yeah, and we actually had that discussion a week before last about reinitiating prescribed burns, and we had a burn specialist in that meeting with us that we brought up from Lawson, and he was like very pro, we can do this and we need to do this, and so that's certainly an active part of the new conversation that we're having.
Well, I think, Tom, I think you get the gist.
I love the passion. Please don't ever lose it.
Well, we won't.
And I apologize that's for what giving it's all you about. Gigs. I should be teasing Commissioner Dion. He's
you have my full permission. Does the board wish to offer formal comment prior to the deadline on the 2nd? If so, that would probably be designating me to work with Commissioner and or Chief Hope.
Well, I think part of it we could submit is the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, which talks about resource management, fuels reductions in certain areas. There might be excerpts that we can work with Sarah to pull out that would be specific to, you know. But aggressive fuels reduction, quoting Senate Bill 360.
That pretty well sums up what
I think so.
Our
perspective.
That monument's right in the middle of everything that we want to do, and I think that wildfire protection plan is really comprehensive, and it would include you.
I would really
just
like
because
to
you're
see
the national forest it. Doesn't mean anything. You know, I mean
that's what we'll do.
Pretty robust. That's a good place to start. Offer the opportunity for cooperative or coordinated effort moving forward with your plan.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be here much longer, but I'm the natural resource designee of the board for at least the next couple of months until we hand the baton. So
consensus is we want to submit that plan as our contribution to comments by Monday?
I would think so.
Is that
to work with Ms. Rubrecht to come up with some highlighting points, cover letter type of thing?
And maybe Chief Hope, some things that we would encourage support of.
Right.
Okay. You know, what the fire chiefs have offered.
And that'll be submitted on behalf
of Have you submitted comments, Chief Hope? Do you plan on it?
First I've heard of it.
You want in on this?
This comment period might not have been as robust and comprehensive as I think maybe you would like.
I was certainly under the impression that it's been advertised far and wide.
But if we don't read roll call or the congressional record, you might miss a couple of these things. We definitely were probably noticed formally, but it doesn't always afford us. We're not the same as Joe Schmo out there and called out specifically. And
there was like three dates I know that you were available, and the only one that really worked out is today. So it's not all on you that this is the 11th hour. You tried for 10:54, and we chose the 11th.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity for us to get together on this.
Okay.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you all.
Okay.
Yeah.
See you soon.
My pleasure meeting all
nice
of you.
Nice to meet you.
Good luck.
Look forward to working together much more.
You bet. Yeah, that'd be nice. Good luck in your endeavor to.
Thank you.
We may all be natives, but we don't mind transplants either.
Well, thank you.
Morgan speaks for herself.
I was born in Detroit, went to Inner City, Detroit High School.
Wow.
Moved to the Upper Peninsula when I was 22, lived there for 25 years, and I like to tell people I was only 2 weeks away from being called a local.
Never.
Good time to get out. To me.
Always 2 weeks from being called.
Yeah. One thing I know is, well, I'm a native Detroit. Oh, you are. Okay.
I don't claim that.
Well, thanks again, Tom.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you all.
Hope to see you again.
Same here.
Okay. Item number 2, Fire Defense Board Chief Annual Presentation.
We're just going to be next week.
Okay, right?
All right. Shall I go down to the end like
you usually do? Jim, I'm going to have to leave at 3, but I'm fine with your truancy ordinance. I'm sure it's fine. I'd like to say I trust
you're
your liaison. Have you, you guys have gone over it?
I appreciate that a little. But
we've talked about it. I haven't seen the exact wording.
The only thing I have to decide on is the age limit for truancy.
For you. 65. Doesn't apply to me.
You're safe.
I have a little question on the age. Okay.
All
Chief, strong. You going to come up and sit in?
Don't you get the memo? We're supposed to wear plaid today.
Mm. Either did he.
Yeah. No, you're fine. Okay. You're fine.
You're the new plaid.
Stripes with the new plaid.
Hey, we got stripes over there.
How you doing, Dave?
Good.
Good to see you, Chief. Good to see you.
We can pull an extra chair up, too.
Where's Sarah?
Yeah,
that's what up. Happens when you're out of town for a while.
It was nice.
Good.
I was back 2 hours and had a first fire.
Right.
Had to stop some Saturday.
Okay.
Boy, that's busy.
Yeah, we've been real busy.
What I didn't understand is how just about a week or two ago, it was still listed at low fire danger, and I called you on that, or didn't I send you a text?
Yeah, I sent you a text message.
Your sign out front, the IV thing, it's like, well, that's a little misleading. Does that mean I can go burn something? Of course, I don't feel that way, but people might, so...
Yeah, what I sent you back and what I was actually saying were two different things, because I was actually like, I'm fishing in Alaska.
I don't care.
The fire danger's fine up here. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, if that's the case, you let me know, and I'll ask for something real next time.
Yeah. So, there
you go. Okay. Who wants to start the ball?
Hey, I'll start the ball. Okay. So we're here, and once again, thank you for allowing us the opportunity to come interface with you guys and renew the relationship that we have with you between the Southern Oregon Fire Service and land management agencies and you folks, and kind of just refresh on what maybe expect this year and maybe talk a little bit about what happened last year if you guys got some questions. I didn't bring the dog and pony show because you guys have been through it several times at this point, so it's really just an opportunity to renew that relationship and let you guys ask some questions, and we've got some trails
we'd like
we can go down.
We'd like to introduce you to our new emergency services manager, Sarah Rubrick.
Well, it works on you.
Yeah, I know.
Be careful. We've all had training on this,
months,
so just be careful.
Her, so now it's official. I think she's going to get a check from us.
So we all had training.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
So with that, we are geared up. All of us have put a lot of energy into preparing for this season. All the indices.
Here already.
Yep, all the indices that we're seeing is that it's going to be a lot like last year and maybe a little bit worse. We'll just have to wait and see what the weather does for us this time around. A lot of new faces on the ground, too. We're kind of hitting that generational point with a lot of agencies where we're bringing in some new folks. So we're spending a lot of time doing the basics, a lot of back to the basics. But our relationship interagency-wise through the Rogue Valley Fire Chiefs Association, the two county fire defense boards, our relationship with ODF, stronger than ever, and we're fully engaged and hopefully prepared to take on whatever comes our way. So that's kind of where we're at. Our relationship with you folks is the same. Sarah, through emergency management, would be our go-to if we end up with something on unprotected lands that needs your attention. We should probably have you guys refresh yourselves on the delegations of authority and how those work to make sure you're comfortable with it. I'm happy to do that if you'd like me to work with you, but I'm sure Sarah's got it. We've already test run it during the Douglas complex, so as long as we're following that process again, I think we're looking pretty good. It'll be one of the fire defense board chiefs with Sarah that will probably touch base with you. High probability I'll probably be around for it. And then working with Dave and Tyler here, some local ODF guys, for anything that might go super significant that we're going to have to all work on together. We will intend to come in and give you guys updates if we get into some significant issues this season. But in the meantime, we're always available to come back in, or if you guys got questions or needs or anything like that, reach out, give us a call. We're happy to come in and sit down and answer questions. Or if you want to go out and see stuff, holler. Anytime we have incidents and you guys want to be involved a little bit, don't hesitate to reach out to one of us. We're more than happy to grab you up and take you on the inside and give you some closer look at what's really going on the ground.
For me, I don't want to just have Tom in here and be critical about plans for fuels reduction in critical areas and not be implementing elements that call for that in our CDIP, our Community Wildfire Protection Plan, and things that we could work on. And with Sarah here now, I think we can kind of lean into that effort. For us, we have to develop a continuity of operations plan for whatever kind of natural disaster mitigation. But fire is that one that just happens every year anyway, or we hope it doesn't, but it has a tendency. So one of the things that came to me just the other day was thinking about pieces of property and how to navigate those from a structural thing, but also that inner agency and, you know, that we could establish. We've got the addresses, labels established for things about where they are, but having an idea when you drive on a piece of property or, you know, to Pacifica, where are those resources, what's available, what should I try to avoid, what should I try to protect. And I don't know how you do that, but like our map that we have right there about the exits, something when you come on to a piece of property that just would be clearly, you could reference somewhere about clearly delineating what's here. What should I be looking for, avoid? I was thinking about it with our my parents' piece of property is it's large and significant, but that we've maintained, you know, a 500-foot buffer of fuels reduction around the house, and understanding that, or, you know, that it's somehow delineated when those kinds of things are out there, or a reprod is there, or I don't know, you know, how do we delineate that stuff on a map so anybody can bring it up and say, oh, this is what I'm dealing with here.
So during Checo Bar, we had actually done some structural triage when we started looking at some lines in the sand when we're going to go from level 3 to level 2 to level 1.
Yeah.
We'd actually gone out and accomplished some structural triage on that west side of 199. The problem is we get shot at. And so we had to pull our people off. So there are some significant challenges of trying to go out and do that structural triage. That's exactly what you're talking about, is looking at a piece of property.
More specifically, yeah. It's really tough to do on a landscaped size scale when you have lots of different little ownerships and properties.
Yeah.
And then maintaining it. So
right.
Initially,
yeah.
Getting
at one moment
good
it's
data.
This, another it's another.
And some people
yeah.
want
we
you
have
engaged.
Had a lot of
some people don't
turnover.
Want to engage. And trying to maintain that. And then when you're into the firefight, taking the time to actually dig that up when you see it right in front of you, and you're
it would have to
it.
Be what I was envisioning was delineated. You know how, like, if you pull over, if you're a police officer, you pull over a car, and there's that blue stripe on the back, you're probably coming up on somebody who's okay and supports law enforcement. If there was something that delineated, like, the IV address label out front,
you need somebody to regulate it in order to stay on it.
Yeah. No, so I mean, it's not going to be a guarantee.
There's systems out there, like the Intera system, that allows you,
right.
when a fire agency shows up, it shows, okay, how many houses are on there, shows pictures of the houses, it triages it, okay, is it green, blue, or green, red, or black? So it gives you all the information ahead of time, but it takes somebody to do all the legwork and put it into the system ahead
yeah.
of time and
keep
maintain
it. Maintained.
It.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far
but
as
when you go and you show up and they try to shoot at you, somebody yeah. should write that down somewhere.
Well, we have red tagged that property.
So there's lots of different layers to the way we do those sorts of things,
yeah.
but there isn't a consistent program or technology. There's some in the development that allows us
uh-huh.
to do that, but it will take years for us to get something that's consistent, maintainable, and then we can input that will import all that stuff.
Is that something the CWPP staff would do, kind of coordinate that? I don't know what the staff person was necessarily going to be charged with doing.
Too big
of
a job.
Way
too big
of
a job.
Yeah, we're a ways from that, but
okay.
there are efforts across the okay. United States to do stuff of that nature and bring it down to a...
Always in the back
of
my mind of anything that
product.
Goes on is the fact that the fire doubles in size like every 30 seconds. So everything you can do to reduce, you know, where is this, what am I doing, when I show up, it'd be like, I did that on the drive over here and I'm good to go from the onset.
So the current methodology is that, you know, of course we're going to be heavily involved in the firefight. We're going to try and stop this thing. We get those immediate threats. So as we activate our Rogue Valley strike teams, or even if it's a conflagration, we're bringing additional resources in. One of the primary roles of those structural resources is going to be to do structural triage. They're going to go into a subdivision, they go into an area, and they're looking at these houses. Yes, we can protect this house. We can protect this house. And there are some houses they can do some immediate work to and then move on so that the house is protected.
Like,
and
if
that's
I put
the role.
Sprinklers on all of my roof, and we had that as a campaign in Josephine County, that you could do this ahead of time, and, you know, if the fire agency shows up, they know that there's some sort of a blue stripe on the way in. You just turn on the faucets or whatever, and it's good to go. I don't know. I was thinking about ways people could take advantage of proactive things that would help the agency. Just
all of that's valid, and all of that is stuff that can be put out there, has been put out there over the years. You just get different levels of receptivity to it. It's all good stuff.
But if I did it, how would Chief Hope know? I'll do that next weekend, but you don't know.
That database doesn't exist. It's
and
always been
there.
Right at that point because, all right, we got to put it.
That's
know.
Where it comes labor intensive to.
Yeah.
Once it's done, then to maintain it and then to update your databases before you get into the next fire season. Then with the transitory population coming in, moving out,
right.
people buying property, selling property,
but
all
people
that,
who
it's really
want
tough.
To do this, it would be nice if there was something there, like at the front of a piece of property. It was delineating, or inside a little bit. Fuels reduction's been done here. All of the structures have. It's a big concern for the rural part of the county that, you know, is They're 22 minutes away from a fire agency showing up. I'm not that far, I hope. But there's a lot of the county that is.
To me, the value is that the person or the people would take the initiative to do that for themselves. And true value to us as firefighters, we'll take it and appreciate it. But the fact is, we're going to ground truth it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't drive up and see that thing on the gate and drive away because, oh, he's already got this handled. We've got to go see if there's somebody else we can help. That's what I would.
You're into a great discussion on the psychology of ownership and self-protection and value and those sorts of things. And it's one that we struggle with from a prevention standpoint all the time. And trying to break and crack into people to understand when you move into our community, when you move into this region of the state, you're moving into a fire environment and you take ownership of that. And a lot of folks don't really understand that. They don't understand what
it means
to be.
Is there anything, because we have a pretty good turnover around here, do realtors, have you approached the realtors and say, you know, when you're moving into a fire zone, these are the things you really should, you know, probably you just...
Yeah.
You know, you have a well, but, you know... There's
a wealth of fire prevention activities and brochures and information that gets out to a lot of those
different
groups.
It seems like when we establish a FireWise community, might be those...
That's where I was going, Simon, is because, you know, we have... There's technologies out there, and, like, the database, it'll be a good idea, and then we come into other issues like maintenance and public safety of getting shot and going out and trying to ground truth with it. But some of the basic stuff is just, you know, if we know we've got FireWise communities and we're going into the areas and going to fight fire in a, you know, designated FireWise community, we know it's got a higher likelihood of we're going to have pretty good success in there versus if it's not. The other thing, too, is when we're rolling in on the fires, you know, in this kind of system, where do we start? You know, we can start over here, but the fire happens over here. So it's going to take time to develop, and it'll be an ongoing process. But the other thing is just the basic technologies that we have out there. I mean, right now we're using our air attack and aircraft coordination with the local resources. You know, Lang knows his district, and, you know, Chief Hoke, he knows his district very well. And so we integrate, and they kind of know what's up on those roads. They're the local knowledge. So we'll go back to doing that. But as we move forward, and this is going to be coming about within the next probably 5 or 10 years, it's going to be real common. You're going to see drones out there. And we'll get a lot of real-time information, you know, from those processes. Some of the drones we're looking at are going to fly at 22,000 feet. It's not going to affect any of the fire operations, and we'll have, you know, links. We've got iPads in our rigs, and we'll probably have something even bigger and better. And we'll be able to be, you know, specific focused on this mission in this area. And then hopefully with the situation unit, as we're collecting all this data, as that would be kind of the time and place to put that and catalog it, and then, you know, for future reference. So there's a lot of moving parts to it. I think it's a great idea. It's just Intera is one that they're working on.
Okay.
But I'm interested to see how the evolution of Intera is going to be, because eventually you're going to have to go back through it and follow it up. And so I haven't really heard of what the maintenance plan is with Intera. It's a great program, and I like it. But, you know, if you took a picture of a house and evaluated structure 5 years ago, that homeowner took really good care of it, and they sold the house and got somebody in there that doesn't, it might look a whole lot different.
It's like any database. It's only as good as the information that's been put into it and how fresh it is. And that becomes the problematic part of trying to track all that.
I've got a book from Big Windy Complex in our dispatch center that was done when Big Windy happened. And it's a book that I could hand off to a team coming in to take over the fire, but all the stuff is going to need to be checked again because it's outdated already.
10 years. So.
If the monument were to say, okay, we want to contract with Oregon Department of Forestry to be their call. Mm-hmm. Are you prepared for that? That's a lot of acres up there.
You know,
do you need more resources? Or
it'd be similar to what I've done with, you know, the BLM with the Soda Mountain Wilderness Area, the Cascade Siskiyou Monument, is that, you know, they're going to pay a rate for fire protection. So there's enough acres, and that may allow us to bring on an extra resource. It might mean that you could staff an engine up there would be part of the agreement. I mean, it depends how that would all look. But there would be a little bit of extra money coming into the pot for provide adequate level of protection. And then that would, they also have some mechanisms that they could pay above and beyond to add extra resources. So maybe they want to base a helicopter out of Illinois Valley, you know, for a 60-day contract or something. So there would be some room for some negotiation and make some effective. Right now, that monument is covered, fire protection is by the Rooks Siskiyou National Forest, is that protecting agency, and we'll respond up there. They just have to request us to go in there. We don't have an automatic aid into that part.
One of the topics I have for you guys specifically, similar to what I shared with Tom and what we're seeing more now, is to the degree that you guys can help us with decision makers and legislators and the government, specifically the federal land management agencies, there is a critical need to bring fire back to the landscape and get back into the prescribed burning and fuels management work that we were doing for years. The reality is we're going to have smoke and we're going to have fire, but we have a choice about how we get that fire and how we get that smoke. And to address Commissioner DeYoung's comment about it's not the time to do it in the middle of summer in the high tourist season, when we can do it during the winter and fall and spring months and keep it a lot less, a lot more manageable, if you will, it's time to bring it back. And those of us who have been around for a while were part of those original programs and then watched it drop off and now see where we're at. It's painfully clear that it's time. We need to get back into that business.
I don't know that you have to convince policymakers. It's them.
The state policy and the federal policy?
No, it's the public.
Oh, the public?
That doesn't understand you know, what they're doing and why they're doing it and stuff. So, because I went to that Southern Oregon fire thing that they had over at the end of the Commons 2 years ago. I say it was two, it was probably four. You know, I think we can be convinced in a room that that makes good sound policy. It's the phone calls that we all get from 1,400 acres, and we need to be burning 10,000 acres a year. And that's going to be something they need education on.
Totally. I can't burn my wood stove, but you can burn...
Yeah, of course.
I can't heat my house, but it's okay for
but
you.
But if the programs no longer exist and there's no funding in there to do those sorts of things, then...
Well, and we need to start out small. You know, maybe it is we do 1,000 acres.
The public education and those pieces that are necessary come with the funding of those programs to get back into the business again.
Right.
Do you guys have state fire associations, national fire associations that you lobby on legislation to allow this?
We work with the Association of State Foresters. That's the national group that we work with, but... they kind of help, you know, we talk about all the issues that are affecting us, but our ability to lobby, we, you know, we don't have that. I mean, it's up to you all to do that for us. The biggest obstacle we have is with the Oregon Smoke Management Plan, and like you say, how much smoke is appropriate to put in, you know, in the air, and so they've constricted us down. The Environmental Quality Commission has slowly, you know, over the years been restricting us, so we got to watch where we put our smoke, and so... Those are all things that are making it real difficult and trying to, and with those air quality standards, they don't count the smoke in the valley during fire season because it's a wildfire smoke. And so I think we would be able to have more opportunities if we could include that smoke as part of, you know, how much is coming in, and that would hopefully open up the opportunities to be able to have to do more burning. Because you can say, hey, here's the real threshold of how much smoke is going in the air.
Yeah.
So that's based on an acceptable standard based on this, not taking wildfire smoke out and trying to constrict you down even more.
And over a period of time, you gain ground where the amount of smoke in the air reduces significantly because you've caught up with the fuels management and you're no longer having the big catastrophic fires that put in massive amounts of smoke.
And we can burn in conditions when the atmosphere is favorable to movement, so you're not getting it like here in the Rogue Valley that sits in here for 2 months. You know, then on that first blue sunny day in fall when fire season's over with and we open up burning and then everyone's ticked off because, you know, they've lived too
small. I've never understood. It's pouring down rain outside. Rain's going to wash the air of all the smoke. And yet, nope, it's a no-burn day in the Rogue Valley. I go, what is up with that? You know, it just doesn't, some of the stuff just doesn't make any sense, but I'm not a fire scientist and an air quality scientist because we're in this bowl here and you know, and we get those foggy days. I went up to Peace Ranch one day. I told my wife, I said, get in the truck. She had cabin fever and was about ready to tear my head off. And I said, get in the truck. We're going out of this fog. And we went up, beautiful sunny day. She just thought the sun had blinked out.
Yeah.
So, but
and there's a big difference between what you can do out in Merlin versus what you can do in CJ versus what's happening here, what's happening over in Sunny Valley. And they're all microclimates, but they often get covered under one blanket about one.
Well, let's just keep working on it. You have our support, you know, for fuels control. That's for darn sure. Speaking of legislators, I had a legislator call me the other day and wanted to know how you were coming along with Josephine County Fire and if you'd made any, if there's any cooperation, collaboration or anything.
Josephine County.
No County Fire?
Oh, yeah. You mean County Fire and Security.
County Fires, yeah.
There's been very little discussion with them. They've been hit and miss in terms of their participation and engagement.
Balls in their court?
As far as I'm concerned, it is. I haven't seen them at a Chiefs meeting in several months now.
Going on here.
I think there was some waiting to see what you folks were going to do with private fire standards.
And where I was leaning towards is I had collected basically DPSSC standard, and that's what I was leaning towards, is just they, you know, keep the DPSSC standard and go from there. But I was going to come back. We've been talking with a few folks about what the next steps need to be. Kind of got distracted last year with the levy and some other stuff. So
I think that is the next logical step, is we need to have that minimum standard in place for any fire department, not just county fire, but for anybody, any fire department.
You're not asking anybody to do anything that you all aren't already doing.
Most of us are already doing.
Well, and the issue to me is having a standard that is defensible, that, and for me, I got an argument with DPSST about, okay, why do you allow felons at this point? I couldn't hire someone with a misdemeanor when I was the PO supervisor from another state, because they, you know, had it as a lifetime. It was writing a bad check, misdemeanor in another state, and that's a lifetime disqualifier in Oregon. But it's not the standard for fire. And so it's been a legislative thing to have different standards. So locally, we have a higher standard than what the state requires. And so is that going to be the county standard, or is it going to be what the state requires as a standard?
I believe the state passed the law back in 15, I think, where you can't ask a new hire what his background is.
No, the law enforcement is excluded from that. But fire, they very specifically allow you to have a felony after 10 years because they wanted to have a route for those that have gone to prison and got wildland firefighting certification to have a path to a fire career. And it specifically came out of the legislature putting on pressure on DPSST to allow that. And so there's some things that are mandatory disqualifiers, but it's a lot looser than law enforcement is. And that's, you know, but that's the state standard. So anyhow, I do have...
Well, just a question that was posed to me, and I said, you know, that's a subject that we haven't reached that for a year, 14 months.
The way we've approached it from the Chiefs Association is pretty simple, and that is we're an association of chief officers who have come together that have public scrutiny and accountability. Therefore, when we're working with private agencies, what we're looking for, especially in communities like this, is that they're essentially, those private agencies are your fire department, as in the county, because if there is no established regulation or guidance for them to operate, and it's just free reign to be able to do what they're going to do. When I come to this table, they come to the table as public entities, as fire professionals. We see you as the chief, if you will, for the unprotected areas. And if you're okay with allowing them to operate in those areas and the public's okay with them to operate in those areas, doesn't necessarily mean it's okay for us to operate with them based on what we're going to do to protect the public's interest and the dollars that we're responsible for. So when we come to you guys and asked about doing the fire standards, it's really our way of saying to a neighboring fire chief, hey, could you do this so that it brings them up to speed so that it is okay for us to interact with them and to share resources and to be actively engaged with them on a safe level. And that's been our position from the get-go. Whether you guys do or don't, or whether the community does or don't, all that's going to do is clarify for us as public entities how we're going to approach it. And we're certainly going to limit our exposure liability-wise by working with agencies that don't have any kind of oversight or no regulation. We have to take that in consideration.
Makes sense.
But that liability, again, comes back to the county commissioners. That's important. You own it.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to make sure that the two of you understand the delegation process and request for conflagration and how you fit into that process, why you would be involved in that. Or would you like Lang to run through that very quick rundown?
The key of why this is important that you're asking is because I believe our fire plan says the chair is the delegate, correct?
So what I'm talking about is that because you are the fire chief mm-hmm. of those unprotected areas, if we have a fire that we are going to be asking the state fire marshal to come and help us in structure protection, you are the fire chief of that area, so we will come to you with a delegation of an authority.
Okay.
That we submit to the
that
state.
That you submit to the state yep. to allow them to come fight fire on your in your district.
And even though I'm liaison emergency services, our fire plan has the chair of the board delegated as the person that's the contact for this.
I think in the past it's been any one of the county commissioners.
Has it?
Should be, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'll double check with Wally and make sure.
Okay.
Yeah, sure my impression is it's been any one of you can do it.
Okay.
In accordance. And running it back through legal to make sure that that boilerplate still works is going to be a really good idea.
We have a commissioner on call at all times. And,
right. And that's what we've done in the
you
past.
Know, and I think maybe that's why I can just see to, where any commissioner would be able to ask for that.
Briefly run you through it. So we'll have a local fire incident. All our local resources will go. We'll pull task forces from Jackson County to come over and help us. We're integrated with ODF. Usually in the first burn period, we're typically going to catch them, but every once in a while we'll have that one will go a little bit bigger or go large. Or we'll have multiple fire starts. It's creating a lack of resource to get to it all. And or we have a community of homes and stuff that's threatened that's beyond our ability, local resources, to manage. And we still need to worry about initial attack for the next day and the day after that on the valley floor because the last thing we want is other fire starts. So that may trigger us to actually reach out to the state fire marshal's office and request conflagration. Conflagration is the process by which we ask the state fire marshal to go to the governor on our behalf to get funding to mobilize state resources to bring them to us. That way we don't have to pay for them. Which
they just did it in Jefferson County. And
correct. State fire marshal resources have to work for somebody. And they will either work typically for a municipality if it's their ground owns it, or a fire district if they own it. Both of those are governing bodies. If it's unprotected, then it defaults to the county commissioners on any given county in the state. What I would do as a fire defense board chief is if we pulled that trigger, we would come to you and say, we need to ask for conflagration and we need state mobilization to bring task forces and an overhead team down here to integrate with ODF to fight this fire. It's on your ground. So I need you to be willing to sign a delegation of authority to do that. I'm doing that on your behalf to the state. If you guys are agreeable to it, you see the need, then we put that delegation together. When the team comes down is when we actually sign.
How long does that process take?
The delegation or to bring them down?
Oh, from the time we say, you know what, we're going to sign the paper, this thing's, we need help.
I've done it as fast as 20 minutes. And then I've done some that's taken a couple hours, and it's often been...
I mean, it's not days.
No.
Okay, all right, good.
No, often I can have resources here within about 6 to 10 hours.
Yeah. I'll have a full fire camp, and I'll be doing it. The goal is push the button, and last year I think I pulled the trigger at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I was doing an in-briefing at 6 o'clock. So within 8 hours, we had a full team mobilized, and they were assuming the fire at that time. So we go quick.
And once I get a gentleman's nod from you folks that it's okay to we'll sign a delegation, they are ordered. They're on their way. We won't actually do the delegation and sign it until they're here and they're ready to take the fire. So we have time.
Save money.
Once that decision is made. I'm sorry?
Does it save money?
Bringing them down?
No, not signing until they get here.
No.
Okay. No, because we set it part of the delegation, the time period that delegation takes effect. So normally it'd be whenever we agreed upon time of handing it over. Most of the time it's like, I'm tapped out here, you know. Yeah.
If we see something that it's just, we know it's Walker Mountain. Mm-hmm. So Walker Mountain catches on fire, and you know, it was a long time we thought, this thing's going all the way to Colonial Valley, burned the whole place down.
I was on it. I know what you're talking about.
Could we sign something? We say, whoops, that is going to be, and get a hold of somebody. We sign that piece of paper, and you have it in hand? Or does it have to really get to?
It's not necessary because we'll be way ahead of that curve.
Okay.
So we had something like, we would be making that decision in the field before we'd ever need to.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't have to wait.
It doesn't speed the process.
It'd be a follow. It would be, okay, we're on it, but now let's get the paperwork done.
What you're relying on as the county commissioners is that the experience that's around this table is going to be way ahead of that curve and calling you when it's time.
Do you hear that?
You up for it.
I like it.
Yeah. Now, there are some responsibilities that go with it. So if we do, on your behalf, bring those resources down, they will be looking for access to county parks, possibly county search and rescue resources. They could be looking at public works to help them with setting up a site. Might be access to water, any number of things. And we've seen that over the years, especially out in the IV with use of some of the parks out there. But the state fire marshal resources will only be here for the height of the immediate danger to the structures. They may leave a couple of days after arrival once that threat's done, but it'll still be part of ODF's program to run and manage the incident. There may be some additional cost that the county will have to cover once those structural resources leave if there's a need to have additional assistance out there. Out on the fire line. And it can be any number of things from rehab to it might be some structural engines, any number of things that will no longer fall underneath their obligations. The delegation that we would sign with them will have some very specific criteria of expectations for them to meet while they're managing the fire on your behalf. And a lot of that will include mapping and damage assessments and rehab recommendations and some other stuff that will come out as product of the work that they do so that there's a way to move forward with surviving and putting people back on their feet again.
And with you being delegating authority there, you'll be an agency administrator, so you'll be brought in. You and I will be hanging out quite a bit together, and we'll hang out with the incident commanders, help establish objectives. You know, I'll be talking like cost shares and stuff, and depending on whose ownership it is and different things. And then, you know, if things start as it starts to wind down, you may elect to appoint an agency representative, which would probably most likely be Sarah, would be the agency rep, and so it can keep you in the loop. Because it doesn't mean you have to set a fire camp the whole time, but we would definitely want to be there, and I would be working with you and just let you know what times we need to be where and kind of what's going on, and keep you in the loop, and it's and it moves quick.
And then when all is said and done, you have to accept that responsibility back. So there's a signing back over of the delegated responsibility.
Releasing them, basically releasing. Okay.
Releasing the team. Yeah, when they go to leave. And we'll, the Fire Defense Board and ODF folks will all be part of helping through that transition. We're unfortunately old hats at it. So it's not as convoluted or complicated, but it can be. Timeliness is often important. To be able to pull those resources together and get them down here timely. And the degree you want to be involved is varying as well. Some folks I've seen from the county commissioners have been actively engaged in planning meetings and planning agency administrator to show up occasionally and delegate responsibilities out to the county staff to be there and to have those conversations. I think a lot of it has to do with where the fire is at and what values are really at risk. Big Windy and some of those, which are kind of out on the outskirts, not so much. If you got some county property that's involved, yeah, maybe a little more. If it's downtown CJ and you know, the community's going to be overrun, then you're probably going to have a lot more activity because you'll have more constituent input coming back towards your office.
Right.
And we're wide open for working with all of that.
Okay. Going back to your fire truck up at the caves. We see fire trucks for sale cycled out of Grand Theft Fire Department. What happens to those? I mean, shouldn't a couple of those be dedicated up there?
Well, the challenge is that they, because of Park Service policy. Park Service policy says if you they don't have any wildland firefighters, so they couldn't take a couple of their park employees and go out there, and if there's a fire on the side, they would put it out. Literally, they could not put out a butt can fire. It was against policy. It really occurred. They had a butt can fire. We would go up there and put it out for them because of their policy. And it's like, it's a stupid policy. And they are so geographically remote.
Yeah, that's a thing.
It didn't make sense.
And that's a huge asset.
Have you had fire extinguisher training?
Have I?
Yeah, I bet you'd still grab the fire extinguisher if you needed, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I can do that. I'd grab that coffee pot.
It'd be really simple for them to, like I say, I benefited because I got the pump unit and they got rid of the truck, but they really need to have some asset up there. And the Park Service does have structural fire departments and some wildland assets at other locations. That's one where I think they need it because it is so darn far away. And, I mean, it takes a while to take even our big rigs. So.
Well, that's a slow, windy road.
It's found downhill on a bicycle. But you got to earn it. You got to go up. My wife's doing it right now.
Again?
Okay.
This is about every day.
Okay. Anything else from
I can talk a little bit about what we got in the bullpen for ODF and a little bit about fire danger and kind of a guesstimate of where I think the fire season's going. Start out with fire danger levels. We went into moderate here a few days back. When you see those peacock boards, low, moderate, high, and extreme, early in the season, when we go into a low fire danger, it used to be we went in at moderate. And so I've rolled things back to administrative decision. On June 1st, we'll go into fire season. We'll start in low, and that shuts off the burning, trace around ammunition, sky lanterns, all those things people like to mess with. And that shuts that part off. And so then we run in low, get our folks trained up, and then when the conditions are conducive to raise it, we'll go up into moderate, which we just did. We also put on our public use restrictions, regulated use, so no campfires, no smoking while traveling, and those sorts of things that go on with that. So those are all in place right now. As we see, you know, things move around as far as going back to the fire danger rating, is that low still means you could have a fire, but it's just probably a low potential of a catastrophic fire. And then now we're in a moderate potential of a catastrophic fire. And then eventually we'll go into high and extreme. So that's really what that's talking about. You can still have a fire in low, and we, you know, we respond to fires 12 months out of the year. Looking at conditions, I'm guessing probably sometime after the 4th of July, we'll probably be entering into high fire danger. The fuels are drying out rapidly. You know, snowpack was pretty much non-existent this year. It doesn't mean a whole lot for us here in the valley because we're low elevation. But the stuff that's up high elevation is cured out. It's ready to burn earlier. And so as fires happen up there, there'll be a resource shortages created because they're going to be up there fighting fire. And so we'll have, just like last year, you know, resources are tied up. And so that's where the snowpack hurts us. About 80% of our rainfall, last year we had a flash drought show up. Remember last year the drought was over and everybody was happy. But after all those consecutive 100-degree days that we had, that long dry period with no rain, that put our fields right square back into a drought condition again. Over the wintertime, that moisture was never able to penetrate all the way to the center of that fuel, so it was just really on the outside of those fuels. And so now with the sun being out and wind, any moisture that was in those fuels is pretty much gone. So our fuels conditions right now are very similar to what I would expect in the last week of July to the first week of August when we look at our fuels conditions on the land.
Did our spring, I know a lot of times the spring rainfall makes the grass higher.
Yeah, it did that, and it hit just right at the craziest time. I mean, it's good to have the rain in there. We had some lightning that came with it. You know, we were able to hold our own on those fires because it was early season and in green up. But we did have one fire that went like 5 acres that was a result of a lightning strike and heavy timber, and that's where the rain really didn't penetrate through the canopy there. So that was kind of a watch-out situation I was looking at right away. It's like, that's not good to have complete consumption in May. The rain, like I say, hit, and then those warm temperatures, and we probably added another 3 to 4 inches to the grass crop out there. I've seen the folks out there haying. And then we have last year's dead stuff. The thatch is still there. That it, whatever didn't burn last year, it's got a fuel load that's actually compressed down there. So we're going to see on grass fires, once things really dry out, you're going to have flame links that are probably going to be in the 5-6 foot category and require actually more water to suppress because you've got a more fuel, condensed fuel bed at the lower levels to go. So there'll be some challenges as we go through.
Are any of the lookouts manned anymore?
No, we are with a full camera detection system. We have 4 personnel that work out of the camera detection center. The hours of operation is 8 o'clock in the morning, and we're running that up until 9 o'clock at night. And we've added actually capacity. Before we had, correct me if I'm wrong, Tyler, I believe there was 9 lookouts back in the day?
It was 8.
15, 8 or
well,
9?
Well, depends on how far back you go.
Yeah.
As of recently, 8.
So now we have on the district, we'll have 14 online by the end of the summer. So right now we have 13 cameras that are up and detecting. So we're pretty much a broad blanket across the district. And they're working very well. So not as much care and feeding to have to go up there. And
I was going
to
say, you don't have to feed them.
Yeah. Yep. So, and, you know, we've consolidated. So, like I say, we have four people working in a detection center and monitoring those cameras at those times. And what's great about it is I can, if I hear a fire call, an alarm go out on the radio, I can pull up that direction and look and see if it's been picked up yet. So we can know right away, do we have a fire there or not? So, and anyone of the staff and anyone that wants to see it in the fire service, they can log in and see the same thing that we're looking at. So there's a lot of positives to that program.
Well, let's just hope. I, you know, that the smoke thing is probably, and I get, they keep saying, well, I bought a tourism, that's why I'm going to take the place all those timber dollars you had. Well, it doesn't. No money really comes from tourism except for the private sector. Tourism doesn't do one thing to this building. Doesn't pay anything, any help of you, and it doesn't help you, it doesn't help us. You know, because without any kind of sales tax, which is the place they would pay, or transient room tax, there isn't any money comes from the tourists. In fact, they become a liability because they go up into the woods and build a fire, and it gets away, and you're left with the baggage. So yeah. It's, I just hope, you know, that and when they talk about, well, you know, we're doing a U.S. force, well, we're going to let it burn, even for a little bit, as using it as part of their, that was not a smart thing to do.
No, and, you know, our policy is still going to be the same. We see fire, we kill it.
Well, we support your policy, that's for sure.
And, you know, fire knows no boundary, and as, you know, the agency has learned, I know no boundary either, and I'll go and do whatever we got to do to take care of that fire. So, but the fuels, I think last year's fire season really brought it to the surface, a realization from a lot of folks that maybe weren't paying attention in the past, now see that there's a, you know, the forests are sick out there, they're choked full of fuel, and, you know, folks got to come up with a strategy to handle it because otherwise it's going to burn. Mother Nature does a great job of taking care of itself. And so if we don't get on this, something's going to happen. And I think that fire they had in the Columbia Gorge was really too close for comfort for a lot of folks. And
well, it was an eye-opener for the north end of the state.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. Oh, why, look at that river down there. This will never burn.
And in its own way.
And jump the river.
Yep. And in its own way, Chuck O'Barr was an eye-opener for land management agents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, fire scars are going to burn at least three times before they finally simmer down.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, no. We heard right here that it's not going to go anywhere because it's right up against that burn and it's slow going. They're not going to let it burn.
I just, you know, when they used to clear cut, you know, they had a stand of timber and then clear cut, and the stand of timber and clear cut, that had to have been a fire break.
Mm-hmm. They did when they were burning the slabs.
Yeah.
And, you know, even, but I mean, if you had a fire break out in one of those strips of timber, it's not going to jump. They could, but 300-400 feet to the next stand of timber. Whereas if it's continuous, it's going to go right on through.
You either manage the forest or let Mother Nature manage the forest.
Yeah.
One of the two's got to happen, and you can't interfere with either one.
2013, what I recall up there, since I was in Douglas County, is that, you know, that dry lightning storm moved through. I believe all, if not most, of the fire started in older plantations of trees. It's typically what the lightning wants to hit is that big tree standing out there. But with the conditions that we had, the weather conditions that we were there, once those timber plant, not the plantations, but once timber went up, it was in its own environment, went plume dominated, and you can't control the spot fires where, you know, it's going to set everything on fire, including the units that are out there that's got the reef rod and some residual slash left over from the harvest. You know, wherever those firebrands are going to land at that time, it's going to keep moving.
Go,
And it's just going to keep propagating until the weather changes.
What are the other quiet impacts we've seen, especially for those of us been around? There used to be a very robust interagency depth of fire resources in this community. Now it's ODF and ourselves, a few of the other private contract agencies that are out there, like Great Back, etc. But the Forest Service presence on the ground now is nowhere where it used to be.
And that's it.
L Street compound, they field a couple of 20-person hand crews just out of Forest, this unit, Gleese.
Well, college kids, you know.
Yeah. All
college kids, that's what they did. Paul Zacher worked every summer at a fire crew.
Yeah.
That's what he did. He came home from college,
thinning,
he got a job at the fire crew, and that's what they did.
Thinning, working, managing the land, running clear cuts, or not clear cuts, but timber harvest, those sorts of things. But the other piece is that a lot of those folks who had local fire knowledge that would pass it on to generation, that institutional history is gone. And part of what we saw at Chuck O'Barr was there was nobody hardly there who really understood how that ground behaved, what the weather conditions could do, and what the institutional history of that.
Damn, we had logging camps all over, and every one of them had a fire, had a water tender.
Sure. So they're out. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to look back at the past to understand what needs to happen now in order to get back to a managed forest.
Or
one of the major issues I had last year with all the fires that were burning around me and were a threat or burning on me at the time is that they would bring in incident management teams from out of area. These weren't the ODF teams. These were the federal teams. And I had a friend.
They all had nice outfits that were matching.
Beautiful outfits. But I had, you know, a conversation with Jim Pena. I've also talked to Merv George here on the Rook Siskiyou, the new force supervisor, and just had an honest conversation, say, really, one of the major breakdowns I saw last year was bringing folks in that were unfamiliar with this fuel type tactics and strategies. And so what we work into every day, you know, and are used to safely attacking and putting out, there were folks coming in that did not have that same level of confidence or experience. And so I've made it real clear that they need to have local resources assigned with that team to help coach those folks how to work in that environment. I was told many a time it's type one ground and I can't go fight fire in it because it's only a hotshot crew could attack it. And I told them straightforward, I took real offense to that because I've been working in this ground almost 30 years. And, you know, it.
Didn't you know you're a hotshot?
Fire's
I must
fire.
Be a hotshot now, so.
Fire's fire, it doesn't matter.
So that was, and they know, and I, you know, meeting with Merv and getting to know him and stuff, and you know, I'm optimistic, and hopefully we'll see some changes from what we saw last year. Sounds to me his plans is to be very aggressive. So I don't know if you've met Merv yet or not, but
no.
It sounds like their plan is to be more aggressive than they were last year.
Cool. Anything else?
Yeah, we're here for you guys.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're going to back you up in any way we can, too.
I appreciate it.
Keep us in the loop, you know, in case there's anything we can do to help.
And if you ever need to get a hold of me 24/7, I think y'all have my number, or you can call Sarah and she knows how to get a hold of me.
Right,
but if you have any concerns or just need more information, I try to make sure you folks are attached to the email list, or at least it goes to Sarah and she forwards it on. But
no, I appreciate you getting updates last year.
We try to keep you informed.
Between me and Chief Hope, we're your go-to for the Structural University.
Boy, he's very accessible.
Sometimes I think he's a little.
Yeah, so I have my number. Good to Simon while I'm fishing.
And I know a lot of folks are envious or some other places of the state are maybe even a little jealous of the relationship and the complete and coordinated system that we have here and our ability to work well together and just appreciate everyone's support. And we'll see how the summer goes.
It's all about relationships.
Team effort.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Item number 3. Mr. Goodwin, you ready? Truancy ordinance?
Well, Walker Mountain was a long time ago.
I remember sitting in my blazer watching that right from the intersection of Merlin there, mm-hmm. watching the hill go up.
Oh, yeah. Fire's scary.
It is. Not. We don't need to take a lot of your time today. And we don't have a draft because just understanding that anything in the ordinance world really needs to come from the board as far as giving legal their blessing to put together. This is an example. The first two pages what Jackson County uses, and the second page is just one that the rep from Grants Pass High School found. I think it's City of Portland. But really what we would do with the board's blessing is put together one that worked for Josephine County. This is timely because we are about to be able to re-enter the schools and do some work that we really haven't been able to do for years. The state, ironically, a youth can penetrate the system through running away from home, being out after curfew, things like that. That's the youth dealing with the juvenile department. The only thing that can happen for chronic truancy, there is a state statute that allows the school district to cite a parent into court. And they can say, parent, get control of that 17-year-old boy that won't go to school, or 16-year-old girl, or we're going to fine you. And then the parent says, oh, please don't fine me, I'll tell them to do better.
Sure.
The kid does what they want. And so there's no authority for the juvenile department anywhere in that process to grab the kid and say, hey, how about we work with you, because you're the one that is truant, not your parents. And so this is just simply a tool that some counties use because there is no, nothing in the ORS that says we can work with a kid, have the authority to work with a kid for chronic truancy issues. And it's one of these things that the chronically truant kids today are kids we have at the juvenile department down the road anyway.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest risk factors.
Well, and quite frankly, so, it was I saw it be a situation where a school resource officer checked on a chronically absent kid, and it turned out there was major neglect going on, mm-hmm. and the kids were put into protective custody, right. And so you never know what's going on as to the why.
And so many other issues, so our goal through this actually would not be, we don't want to take up court time or anything like that, but what we can say is, with an ordinance written properly, the juvenile department actually, since we'll have embedded folks in the schools, or the school district can cite that kid. We can say, okay, youth, now we have a cite, let's pull in the family, let's pull in the parents, and let's get to the root of why you can't get to school.
This is getting serious.
And then we're going to remove those barriers. Okay, you don't have gas money, you don't have this, you don't have that. We're going to work with the family to get the kid in school. It's not an I gotcha, let's hammer the kid and fine them. This population doesn't have any money anyway. You know, but it's just a tool that we feel we can use should the county pass such a thing to really relieve some pressure off the school district. They're asking us, you know, where can you help? And this is one area I think where we can.
So we don't have a.
We do not. So my ask would be, would the board be willing to say, can juvenile department work with legal to put together a county ordinance that would work for us? We would then bring that back to you at an admin. You could look at it, and then you'd have to go through the, you know, the ordinance.
Legal
process.
Would bring it to us, and we'd go from there. Yeah.
Well, I think there's no question that we've got a graduation rate problem in Josephine County.
Oh, it's terrible.
And it's not.
Yeah.
If we don't do anything to fix that.
Yeah.
If anybody asks, you know, yeah, I'm going to bring my kids here and put them through your school system. What's your graduation rate? Oh, 68.5%. They go, whoa, what the heck's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long before my child gets involved in that?
Right.
So, do you have definitions of unexcused?
All of those would be worked out. We would bring a draft, like I said, one that would make sense for our county. And how many days would it be? What is unexcused? All of those.
Yeah. Because my junior year, I had mononucleosis, and I didn't go to school about half a year.
Right.
Right. So, it didn't upset me at all, but I couldn't stay awake.
So Commissioner Hare weighed in earlier in the meeting because he was going to be gone, saying he supported you moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
I would support you working with legal to draft something that you can bring back to us.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. You know, it's something I think it's something that, you know, it's a positive move, and it's before the storm.
Yes, it is. And like I said, the whole idea is the prevention on the front end so that that kid doesn't wind up with us down the road, like, because it's one of the highest risk factors. If you don't go to school, you're at high risk to commit a crime. That's just the way it is. So.
Well, is there anything in there, you know, for instance, and a lot of kids don't even think past the end of their nose, but I certainly didn't. But is there any kind of ramifications you could instill upon the kids, you know, says, hey, you know, this, you get one of these citations, what's that going to tell your potential employer when you do finally wake up and decide to go get it? You don't want anything following you out of this
right.
Past.
Right, exactly. And that's just kind of the carrot that we use with mm-hmm. this, because there can be some legal ramifications.
For Pete's sake, don't shackle yourself going out into the
right.
In the job world, you know, by having something stupid like this in there.
Right.
Get to school, attend, and bound to pick up something.
Right. So, all right.
Okay.
All right. Here,
so, we'll work with you two will work together,
yes,
or your departments will work together.
Great.
Yeah, that's your charge. I think you're okay with that?
Yes, sir.
Appreciate
much.
It. Thank you.
Thank you. All sorry right. I had to wait so long, Jim.
Oh, it's okay.
You
never know.
Like
these.
Do, but, you know,
those guys love to talk about fire.
It was all good stuff today. Today was all good stuff. I have to admit that.
Thank you.
Item number 4 is other. Do you have anything?
No, sir.
The only thing that I have under other is that yesterday at Rogue Valley Council.
Hold on just a second. We need to make sure on our agenda that it says matters from commissioners, because other is like items to take action on, and matters from commissioner. And I noticed this week we've had a couple meetings that didn't have matters from commissioners listed on it.
Okay. This is just another, this is just a FYI. Yesterday at Rogue Valley Council of Governments, the ODOT guy was in there, and he said that the probationary period is over for cell phone usage in cars and driving, phones, cell phones, texting, everything. It says $1,000 fine starting July 1. They're going to start writing tickets. It's going to be huge. I'm going to just be writing tickets constantly. So, $1,000 fine is what he told us yesterday. That is big.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, just to let you know. Anything else?
No, sir.
Okay, with that, we're adjourned at 3:34.